Hello, welcome to Spotlight, a ray of arty hope glimpsing through the grey of autumn clouds.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
This evening, we catch up with a local silver band as they look forward to a weekend's concert with a guest conductor and the release of their fourth album. Eighth, Manx bard Michael Manning prepares to release his first collection of poems. The final concert in the current season for Ramsey Music Society, and they're all prawns in the political system. We hear about the third volume of Timble Balls. Do get in touch with any creative artistic endeavours you may be involved in, planning, hoping to create, or would really like to put in the spotlight. Yes, I know, I say it every week. Poetic, theatrical, musical, literary, ceramic, sculpture, drag, film, mime, social media. Get in contact. We'd love to hear from you, get you featured on the programme. And more people are. Delighted to say so. Been plenty of interesting things happening of late. Make yours one of them. Howard Kane at manxradio.com, Kane with an E. Spotlight at manxradio.com, if you prefer. They come to the same spot, as far as I'm aware. So I'd love to hear from you. So much to hear, so little time. Let's get going with former bard and all-round lovely chap Michael Manning. We chatted a lot with Michael during his year as bard, of course. Hard to believe he was number 8, and the current bard, Bradley Chambers, is number 11. But that's life for you. Here today, gone tomorrow. The important thing, of course, is to make the most of the bit in the middle, something Michael clearly has been doing and still is, as he's still writing, like all the former bards, I think, and about to release a collection of his work, which he confirmed to me was his first ever collection to be published.
It is, yes. So I've had individual poems published in some different publications, both locally and abroad as well, but this is the first poetry collection, yes.
What inspired it, or is there an actual theme for the collection?
There is, yeah. It's very much based on my experiences working with a charity, local charity called GRI, which is the Manx word for love. It's a charity that served people who were homeless on the island. And it's a collection that's quite tightly focused, really, around the lives of the men and women that I met, relationships formed, questions, challenges, inspiration. So very much around those sorts of experiences. And really seeking, I suppose, how the reality of the lives on the margins, even in a place like the Isle of Man, can have power to speak to us today.
And I think, as you're saying there, people on the margins, and I suppose that just that in itself, using that phrase, people living on the margins, a lot of people on the Isle of Man might think, might not even be aware that we have people exactly in those sort of circumstances living here, which a lot of people might think, it's a very prosperous place.
Absolutely. And that was something that we saw quite a lot of through my work with GRI. I mean, I got involved with the work that would become GRI 20 years ago, and was with them for the best part of 17 years or so. And, you know, we saw hundreds of different people, some requiring shelter for just a night or two, some requiring lots of other sort of different sorts of help, lots of food. And just really meeting people and trying to build relationships and support people in the lives that they had. And so sometimes I think in small communities, problems can be just a little bit more hidden because they're not as visible. You know, we don't see people begging down Strand Street or necessarily sleeping rough in shop doorways, but it does happen on the margins, but it's out of people's sight. And so that makes it easier for us to ignore.
So, as you sort of mentioned at the beginning there, the people, some of these people you've met over the years working there, that provide a sort of an inspiration for the poetry?
Absolutely. I mean, I was very young when I first got involved. I was just an 18-year-old who didn't know anything about homelessness, nothing about mental health, nothing about addiction. And it was really a revelation to me to meet these men and women, sharing the island where I'd grown up and everything else. And, you know, there's just a huge amount, I think, that people are amazing. And the men and women that I met are amazing. And this isn't their stories. It's very much my reactions and my memories of them. I've been quite sensitive about who I've written about in the collection. So most of the individuals that I've written about are people who have died. And we saw a lot of early death for a variety of reasons, which was always very sad. But I think they also just helped to show me what's important, I suppose, in life. And they sort of spoke into my life with great power, and it's sort of me reflecting on that, I suppose, in the poems.
And a variety of styles within the actual structure of the poetry?
I've tried to make it pretty varied. So I think the shortest poem is about 6 words long to a few pages long. They're in a variety of styles, some rhyming, some not. And they're interspersed as well with some of my Manx landscape poems, which are partly there just to remind us that the lives of these men and women exist on an island that's full of such beauty and full of such inspiration. I love being up in the hills, and there's a number of poems that people may have heard from me as a bard about the Manx landscape, and so some of those are in there as well.
Oh, so it's a mixture, because I know, again, an awful lot of your poetry is around your experiences working with Gray and working with charity and helping the people you've been describing about there, but you also get inspiration from the from another side of living on the Isle of Man, I suppose, as you say, getting out into the hills and the wonderful solitude and isolation and beauty you can experience there.
Absolutely. And so there's some of that. There's a number of political poems. I'm interested in that on the island, and I'm particularly interested in the challenges that poverty brings to our politics together, really, on the island. And so there's a number of politically themed ones too. And so there should be a bit for everyone, shall we say? And coming at it from a variety of angles. And I think there's a, you know, while I'm keen to make it a sort of a public sort of collection of poems, and obviously publishing it makes them public, and they are very personal as well. There's a number of them that reflect on questions, really, as you engage with poverty as a Christian. I'm a Christian, and so my faith comes through in a number of the poems too.
And tell us a bit about the title as well, because it's called Gray Prophetic Utopian Poems.
Yes, Prophetic Utopian Poems is a Prophetic Utopian is a subtitle that I borrowed from a theologian, a liberation theologian who I've quite enjoyed reading, called John Sobrino. So I'm not making any claims to that. But really, it's just a shorthand way of saying the prophetic is almost like what's here now. You know, what's the reality of people's lives here now? And here's the reality of some lives that you might not be aware of on the island and their stories. So that's the prophetic bit. And the utopian bit is hopeful. I think people can sometimes think, oh, we're going to be a load about poems about misery and pain and abuse and addiction. And there is an honest reckoning with pain. But I hope that there's a number of poems there that speak of hope, that speak of what we can be on the island. There's a huge amount of good work that goes on the island, but there are a huge amount of things that we could do better. And so that's the utopian aspect. I want it to be a very hopeful, and it is a very hopeful collection.
And yeah, which is wonderful. And as you say, whilst I think it's always great to have hope there and be positive looking, equally, as you've hinted at there as well, I think that a collection like this maybe highlights for some people, like I said, it's very easy, isn't it, for a lot of people just to sweep some of these issues under the carpet and think, oh, we don't have any problem with homelessness or people going hungry and whatever. And, you know, it's nice to actually recognise, well, yes, we do, but, you know, we need to deal with it.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it's pointing out just the experiences of individuals and who are living on the margins, often who are socially excluded, and who would never, I think of some of the guys that I've known through the years, and they would be laughing in their graves if they thought they were having poems written about them that would be, you know, supported by an arts body on the island and all the rest of it. But I think that's actually really important, you know, that poetry is for everybody. Poetry can reflect on anybody in any sorts of situations. It doesn't have to be an elite thing or just an art type thing. It really is for everybody, and that's very much what I've tried to bring across by making them accessible and varied as well in terms of the poems themselves.
And you mentioned the support there from Culture Vanna for this collection. Of course,
I'm hugely grateful, and I was very unsure with the collection because of the themes that it dealt with, and because of the sort of social and political, I suppose, ramifications of it, how much support there might be for it. But I've been really pleased. Culture Vanin have been very generous in their support, hugely helpful, and their publication has only been possible because of their support. So I'm very thankful to Culture Vanin for their support.
And then we do have a launch party coming up in November.
We do. So Saturday, the 8th of November, 7:30 at Broadway Baptist Church in Douglas. It's a free poetry music concert. I'll read a number of works from the book, but I'm delighted to be joined by a number of other people as well. So we'll have some local poets and some local musicians. And so if poetry's not your thing, come for the music. If music's not your thing and poetry's not your thing, come for the free cake. And if poetry, music and cake cake is not your thing, there's not a lot I can do, but you'll be made very welcome. So it's lovely. It'll be lovely to see as many people there. It's all free, and that's happening Saturday, 8th of November.
What's not to like? And I read even more, if that wasn't tempting enough or temptation enough for people to come along, that it says the volume's going to have a limited print run, each hand numbered, and the book will accessibly be offered for free at the launch concert, just people being asked perhaps to make a donation.
I mean, again, partly with my experience with the guys, I've wanted to make this as accessible as possible. And I very much see, perhaps my role as a bard as well, that it's sort of a poetry as a gift to the wider community, you know, and if there's any gifts that I may have with words, then I'd like to see that freely shared, really. And so the book will be free. It'll be placed in most public libraries. It will be available, obviously, at the launch concert, and it'll be available after that at the Bridge Bookshop, the book company and the church's bookshop, where it will still be free, and people will be invited to make donations should they be able to and should they wish to do that. But the important thing is that it's people get a copy and read it and share it as they wish. I'm very much into an economy of grace rather than commodification, so I'm very happy to offer it for free.
Well, that's very generous, and I think a wonderful idea, great collection. And you're still writing? I mean, obviously the collection's coming out here, but you still find yourself writing poetry? I mean, it's a few years now. I think we're on to bard number 11 now. So, but you still find yourself inspired to write poetry?
I am. And really being chosen as one of the bards back in 2022 was a huge spur to reading and writing poetry. So I continue to do that and find a real delight in that. I was involved in St. Michael's Week earlier this year, which was my last sort of major piece of work, a number of poems for them. But yep, still writing and reading lots. My work situation allowed me to be able to, you know, do some more reading and writing. And so it's great to have the freedom to be able to do that. And this has been obviously a major project. So I'm looking forward to getting this sort of over the line and finished in the book out there. And we'll see what happens after that. But I'm sure I'll still be writing.
Lovely. And I don't know, actually, but are you able to give us a poem?
I am able to give you a poem, of course. For you, Howard, always a poem for you. This is actually a poem that opens the collection and speaks to some of the themes within it, and is really just an invitation, as I think the lives of the men and women that I write about really are. And this poem is called Mananan's Cloak. This land is veiled, or so they say, praising the fine cloak of mist over the high hills, round the shore, the hidden heritage of glens that keep us more free than any other, free from any yoke. This land is veiled. The empty streets are quiet and rich. The brass plate gleams. You cannot argue with what is unseen. No need to raise your voice or ask too many questions. No need to change. The choice was made for offshore coin and company, it seems. This land is veiled, so I would brim and boil apocalypse, rend the very heavens, rant with lips alive with rage and tear it down, the sodden, foggy structures of this place. Shout from the rooftops what they whispered in the dark. There is nothing hidden that will not be disclosed. Who wants the truth unveiled? We are the rich inheritors. Prefer the prim pretense that someone has to do it. Draw the golden cloak around the way of life grown fiduciary and fat and happy. We are a small people, making our small way in the world. They took our tongue when they bought us. We are silent. This land is veiled. But come. There is a battered, flaking blue door up concrete steps. The truth is raw. Press the buzzer. Go up the stairs. Find out how this island really fares.
The Brass Plates Gleam. A lovely piece, opening piece from Michael's collection. Very best of luck with that, and we look forward to the next volume.
Thank you so much for your support, Harrod. Always lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much.
A thoughtful piece from a thoughtful poet. Don't forget that free launch of Michael's collection on Saturday the 8th of November, Broadway Baptist Church, 7:30. All welcome, poetry, music and cake. What more could you ask? Pop along if you can and look out for his collection. Always thought-provoking.
Spotlight, brought to you by the Isle of Man Arts Council.
Whilst I remember, this year's series of concerts put on by the Ramsey Music Society are drawing to a close for another year. In September, there was a special concert, of course, Young Talents of Man. On the stage, young singers, pianists and brass players who are aspiring musicians, the next generation. And great to see them out there performing. October, it is the Italian-Croatian pianist Ida Pelliccioli. She studied in France, received a double diploma in interpretation and pedagogy, would you believe, at the École Normale in Paris. Ida, or Ida, take your pick, I'll go for Ida, chose to avoid the international competition circuit and, before becoming a full-time pianist, received a double master diploma at the Sorbonne in Italian Literature and Ancient Greek History. Some people are just too talented, aren't they? She's been performing throughout Europe, Canada, Australia and South Africa, having made her debut in Thailand in 2025. It's also, when she's not been doing everything else, it seems, been on screen playing the role of a pianist for the American TV series Find Me in Paris seasons 1 and 2 and the French series Munch in 2018. She also, in 2021, took up a teaching position at the Paris Conservatoire in the 8th arrondissement. Her programme for her concert on the Isle of Man in Ramsey Grammar School, 20th of October, includes pieces by Schubert, Mozart, Scarlatti and Biesco de Negre. Sounds good, doesn't it? Must see if I can get it, if I can. It's the last season as well. It's the last concert of the season as well, of course, making it more important than ever you go and see it, because then there's going to be a break. Monday the 20th of October, 7:30, West Building, Ramsey Grammar School. Tickets £15, payable in cash on the door. Free entry for pupils and students under the age of 18. Can't say fairer than that. And of course, we'll catch up with Olga, because I know she's already got the 2026 programme pretty much finalised. Amazing how far they have to plan ahead for these things. So we'll no doubt catch up with Olga from the Ramsey Music Society to hear about next year's concert series. But in the meantime, this is your last chance, 7:30 West Building, Ramsey Grammar School, to catch Ida Pelliccioli with that great programme on the 20th of October. Now, from music making in the north to music making in the south, Russian Silver Band has a concert at Russian Primary School this Saturday with guest conductor Alan Ferney, prestigious name. It's ahead of the launch of their latest CD. They're a busy bunch. To find out more, I spoke to band chairman Chris Weldon.
We're delighted to welcome a good friend of the band, Alan Ferney, over to the island again. He's been to see us 5 or 6 times over the last 10 years and is a great supporter of what we do. Alan's a huge name in the brass band world in the UK, a composer, arranger of lots of music, and he conducts his own bands as well as being in musical education.
How did the link start with Alan back in the day?
It came from our conductor, John Kinley, who was doing a degree in brass band studies. And Alan was one of the tutors, particularly around composing and arranging. And we've built a relationship from there.
A degree in brass band studies. I just like the sound of that straight off. Really,
it's fantastic. So obviously, John's first degree is in chemistry. But in later life, he'd been conducting the band for a while. He's been in brass bands all his life, but wanted to go and do some more study. And it made a huge range of contacts and learning that he's brought back to the island and to Russian band in particular.
He's a super talented chap, and Alan's working with the band for a couple of evenings before the concert itself.
Absolutely, he's working with the senior band on Thursday evening, and then with Balafes and Brass, our development band, on Friday evening before bringing us all together on Saturday, and then we'll do the concert on Saturday afternoon. And that concert is partly Russian Silver Band, partly Balafes and Brass, and then we're going to bring them all together at the end to do some joint pieces together.
And tell us a little bit more about Balafes and Brass, as you say, a development group. So is this sort of specifically young people, or just people who have less experience on the brass and silver instruments?
Absolutely a bit of both. It really started from teaching young people, but over the years we've had a whole lot of people who are either coming back to playing or want to take up an instrument in their more mature years, shall we say, and we're delighted to be able to support that. So we teach on a Friday night. We start from complete beginners with individual one-on-one lessons, and then we develop through to playing in small groups and bigger groups as playing improves. It's a really good stepping stone to move people onto the main band when they're ready for that. And that's all. It's not quite free of charge. There's an annual membership fee, but it is an annual membership fee of a small amount of money, and then taught entirely by volunteers from the band.
Brilliant. And it's a great chance in concerts like this when the two are together, I suppose, in that the less experienced, it's really good to obviously play with someone who's got more experience, a better player, and absorb some of their skills and see their phrasings and such like. And the other way around, it's wonderful, actually, again, if you're sort of at the upper end, to see the talent coming through.
I think it's a fantastic thing. We try and do it at least once every year for those very reasons. We mix the two bands up, so sitting on what we call the end chair will be one of the younger players, not necessarily the senior player. So getting that development experience, sitting next to some senior players, finding out what a big full band can sound like. But as you say, some of us who don't always get involved on a Friday night, seeing that pipeline of talent that are coming through the band, really important.
Concert also, of course, not just a concert in its own right, but marking the release of the band's, I sort of look at this, fourth CD. It's very impressive. Fourth CD coming out.
Indeed, we try and do one every 5 or 6 years, partly as a record for the band, partly as a development opportunity for, you know, everybody in the band to try and different. With having so many young people in the band, they tend to go off to university or further study. So it's often a different band every time we do one of these things. So a great experience for everybody. But it's also a chance for us to show what a brass band can do. So our first two CDs were, you know, general music. The third one was a Christmas CD, which always goes down well in December. And this time we've brought it back to the Isle of Man, and we've done a CD of Celtic music. The CD is called Celtic Connection. So all the music we're doing has some kind of connection to the Celtic world, sometimes a little bit more vague than others. But primarily a lot of Manx music is at the centre of that, and then some Welsh, some Scottish, some Breton music from our time when we went to the Inter-Celtic Festival at Lorient. So we brought some of that into the CD as well. So a great mix of some tunes you'll know, some you might not, but a really good choice of music, and it's sounding really good.
And we were saying, just as we're talking now, they're literally winging their way, or floating their way, I think, on the boat as they're coming across to the island. And we were just saying, when it comes to recording a brass band, quite a specialist job to a degree, isn't it? Because there's such dynamic range in brass that it's a challenge to a recording engineer to really capture that.
Yeah, and this is 30 players playing at the same time. So when we all get blowing, it's loud, but it can be quiet. And the balance and the delicate nature of some of the playing really is important to have somebody who's a specialist at recording this stuff. We did a great weekend at Portsmouth Mary Primary School, but the setup took quite a long time. There were probably 25 microphones around the band, and all that setup and the mixing of things that goes on. We spent the weekend recording, but we spent many weeks working with the producers, editing it down to get just that right sound we wanted. And it's come out really well. Importantly, this time, we've more than just a CD. We've also got a digital download available.
Fantastic.
We surveyed the band and found that less than half the people in the band had a CD player these days. So we've made it available for digital download as well through the band's social media pages.
That's a great idea. And is that the place to get either the download or the CD? Go there. Will it be available in shops or just at concerts?
Absolutely. So concerts via our social media, but also in a number of local shops. We've been very lucky to have their support for the last two or three CDs where we've had it out around the island. Previously, I'm not sure where it'll be this time, but I'm sure it'll be the same places. The Manx Museum, Trend in Port Erin. Lots of places have been able to support us by helping us distribute those CDs.
And of course, speaking of support, there's obviously always support for the band when it comes to major projects like this, whether it's, you know, bringing Alan over the concerts or putting CDs together.
Absolutely. We're hugely lucky to have the support we do on the island. In particular, I'd like to call out the Isle of Man Steam Packet and their Manx Community Assistance Fund. They were brilliant last year helping us go to Scotland, actually where we met up with Alan Fernie again, but also in helping with Alan's costs of travel. They've been absolutely fantastic for that. We've had some support from a couple of individual supporters of the band helping funds towards the CD, but also Culture Vanin have been fantastic. So they've helped underwrite the cost of the CD, and we'll be delighted to see some representatives of Culture Vanin at the concert on Saturday, and we'll be able to present them a couple of CDs for their archive. They've been hugely helpful for this.
Listen, best of luck with the concert and the CD launch. I look forward to Volume 5 already. Before that, I dare say, after this, I assume there'll be sort of the band looking towards what usually for bands is a busy Christmas season.
Yeah, we've got Remembrance Day first, but the Christmas music will be out very soon in the rehearsal pads, and we've got our concert at the end of November at the Erin Arts Centre. Pleased to announce that we'll be doing a Carol Train on the Steam Railway again at, on the 6th of December.
Brilliant.
And then we're into about 15 other things over the rest of the month.
Sounds good, doesn't it? Go along and see it, or perhaps buy the CD. Ideal Christmas present, just a thought. Now, who remembers classics such as "In the Old Days It Was Me or the Vicar When It Came to Battered Wives"? "We're accused of nasal gazing," or perhaps "No one's going to put their head above the paraffin." Yes, indeed, Timble Balls, a couple from Peter Caron and Bill Henderson there, and you'll be relieved to know, all said by Manx politicians in the Keys or Timble during debate over the years. Good to see the skill of public speaking is alive and well, and carefully recorded for our delectation by then MHK Quinton Gill and now Speaker of the Keys Ewan Watterson. Happily, the pair are still at it, from within and without, as it were, and have just released a third collection, with all profits as usual going to good causes. I hot-footed it down the line to Russian to nail Speaker Ewan Watterson to the chair for a few moments to hear how it had all commensurated.
Well, it started as a sort of rather subversive thing on the back benches for Russian with Quinton Gill, and together we are the sort of the co-conspirators of it. And it sort of then migrated into a sort of just collecting them on scraps of paper. And we were both on the board of Southern Befrienders, and we needed the money as a charity. And so Quinton had the great idea of putting this together in a book, which we did. And yes, the title was very much inspired by Coleman Balls in Private Eye. And just some of the things that have been said over the years in Tinwood, there is a wealth of material out there. It's the gift that keeps on giving, really. But so far, it's raised £15,000 for Southern Befrienders. And now the third edition is going to raise money for Crossroads Caring for Carers. So really good causes and a fantastic way to have a laugh and provide money for a very, very good cause.
Absolutely. And I was pondering that. You've half answered that question of how you go about compiling it. It is as simple as that, is it? You were there, I mean, Quinton back in the day, you there still now, you're sitting, and as government matters are going through, you're sort of every so often you might hear a little gem and just jot something down in the margin.
I think you can look around the chamber, and when members are on their feet, you know, the blood's rushing to their mouths, and they all of a sudden will see my desk go up and their heart will sink, because it means that they've said something and it's almost certainly going to end up in Tinwood Balls. So I keep a little notepad in the desk drawer and make a note of when I hear something that perhaps a member might regret later, and it'll go in the book. And no one's exempt. I've got ones in there myself, but it's just it is something that's gone from being a bit sort of subversive at the back of it to being something now that has become a bit of an institution in Tinwood, really.
Yes, I think we've all done it, and particularly in the heat of the moment, if you're speaking, and very much if you're speaking off the cuff, you're not just verbatim from something you've got reading in front of you, then it is very easy to fall into these traps. As you say, anyone can do it, even the best of speakers. There have been, I suppose, a few notables over the year, and the great Peter Caron, I suppose you must probably, from a Timble Balls point of view, miss his presence to discussions and contributions in Timbald and the Keys.
Well, Peter really was the font of all contributions for Timble Balls. I mean, we're still using some of the material that Peter left behind, even though we're on volume 3 and then Peter's been out of Tinwood for a little while now. You know, such was his legendary status that there are still some Peter Caron nuggets in the third edition for people to enjoy.
You fessed up that you do indeed, because that's another one. Some would say, well, you must make a few mistakes yourself, Ewan, or even Quinton might have done. But you have actually, you played the white boy, you do put in your own gaffes as well.
Absolutely. The thing is, you don't notice your own as easily. But when people do highlight them for me and they've written them down and said, I think you just said that, and I'll fess up and it'll go in the book along with the rest of them. I think I did once say that there was only one toilet in Port Eyre, and I must have been talking slightly more specifically about a venue, but that's not what I said. So go in the book along with some of the other contributions over the years.
Do you have to ask for members' permission to go into the book, or, you know, if you ever had anyone not sort of want to go along with it and said, yeah, I know I might have said it, but I don't want it put into print?
Absolutely not. We better to ask forgiveness than ask for permission on this one. And I think the fact that it's all the money is going to charity, to good causes, means that we've never had a complaint in all the years that we've been doing this. And I think it does go to show that members do have a sense of humour. It's a serious job. We take it seriously, but it doesn't mean that we can't have fun doing it. And Tinwell Balls is one of those ways.
Absolutely. And as you say, it is part and parcel of going with the job when you're doing a lot of public speaking. Anyone, do you think in your eyes, and again, this is purely a personal view, anyone managed to step into Mr. Karen's shoes as a gift that keeps on giving?
I think that, as we move forward, the contributions are coming from a far wider spread of sources, shall we say. Looking at some of the ones that have gone in there over the years, the Isle of Chuckle, and it's wonderful. You don't even need to know who the people are. Obviously, most people on the Isle of Man will know. But I was stopped when I was in Westminster. I was introduced to a government minister in Westminster. They said, "Oh, you'll have to forgive me. I don't know an awful lot about Manx politics. And I get the only thing I know about it is this book called Tinwell Balls." So it's good to see that its influence has spread far and wide around the place.
That is fame at last, it has to be said. So go on, I might be putting you on the spot. Three volumes in now. Are there any all-time favourites for you, as obviously you and Quinton are the two main reprobates behind it? So any that really stick in your mind from any of the volumes, really?
I think it's maybe the inner accountant in me that there's two that always stick in my mind. One is the Peter Caron classic of 10% of nothing is nothing, 20% of nothing is an even bigger nothing. And the other one's one from the late, great Bill Mullarky, when he said that there are none now and there'll be fewer in the future.
That is classic, isn't it?
People say, "Do you make these up?" And, you know, we are not funny enough to make these up.
For me, I think it's always hard to be another white elephant coming home to roost. I think it's an absolute gem. Well, marvellous. Thanks for spending a few minutes to talk about it today. And long may it continue. Keep scribbling in the margins, and we look forward to volume 4 in due course. There, but for the grace of God goes die. Tinwell Balls Volume 3, out now, widely available around the island in all good bookshops and quite a few ones. That's about it for now. Back next week when we'll be dancing our way to KA, amongst other joys. See you then. And in the meantime, whatever you're doing, be creative about it. Hey, Moo!